Well, beloved listeners, a big conference today in Canberra. Surprise, surprise. No, it wasn't about putting up a ballistic missile shield to protect us from New Zealand. It was. It had the very grand title of Accountability and the Law. Very, very Mother's Day, isn't it? And everyone surely would agree. But there's a sting in the subtitle of the conference, The Case for a Federal Anti-Corruption Commission, much discussed here and elsewhere over the last couple of years. There is, of course, a push for a federal ICAC, but it is, I think to say, it's fair to say, being resisted with various degrees of intensity by the federal pollies. So how did it go in Canberra today, attending and taking part in a panel, was Alex McKean, barrister and lecturer in law at the University of the Sunshine Coast in Queensland, and also attending and wrapping up proceedings with a keynote was Dr. Cameron Murray, an economist from the University of Queensland, and Cameron's co-author of a new book called Game of Mates, and they both join me from the ABC studio in Canberra. Welcome, gentlemen, to our little wireless program. Now, Cameron, I'm going to start with you because I've just been advised that you stunned the audience with a speech tonight. The room was captivated by your description of an experiment involving corruption and mateship, friendship, which is, of course, the theme of your book. Can you give me the essence of this experiment?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Philip. So for my PhD research, I really wanted to see how we could stop corruption. And I couldn't do an experiment in real life by asking politicians. So I wrote a computer game. I coded a computer game. And I had students come in and participate in groups in the game to earn real money. And they got to play against each other. And what they could do is they could either play fairly in the interests of the whole group, or they could form a little mafia, a little tribe or a little group and take control and give favours within their group, and by doing so, steal from the pie from everybody else. And what happened was 84% of groups that I had through formed these little mafia tribes and traded favours just like we see in politics.
So there was spontaneous combustion of corruption.
Yeah, exactly. When there was a favour to be given and it was worth a lot of money, people would seek out someone who would later reciprocate, and then they, through repeated exchanges, would form a very loyal little group that just looked after each other regardless of the cost to everybody else.
You should be ashamed of yourself, but that's very, very clever. Okay. Now, let's go to you, if I might, Alex. What was the case well argued for a national ICAC?
Yes, indeed, Philip, and thank you for having me on. One of the speakers said this morning, the case for a federal ICAC has been made out, and there are a number of reasons why it's an idea which the time has come for. In fact, the time may be ticking pretty urgently to have one of these things, and it really is extraordinary when I speak to people about the fact that we now have anti-corruption commissions in each of the states, and the territories are moving very quickly to bring them in, that we do not have one at the federal level.
You were on a panel about the weaknesses in the current system. In your view, what are the most significant of those weaknesses?
Well, probably the most significant weakness is that there simply is not coverage. So all of the states essentially have a broad-based anti-corruption commission which can investigate, root out and expose corruption throughout the public service and indeed the political operators. And that there is simply a yawning gap when it comes to the federal integrity architecture. That body does not exist.
Alex, isn't it fair to say that there's been some attempt to haul back ICAC in New South Wales, to muzzle it at least a little?
Yes, and I made the comment today that I thought it was extraordinary that one of the things that seems to be happening is that that there is a push on to try to prevent any federal ICAC which might be brought into existence from being able to conduct public hearings. So a situation where there'll be allegations of corruption and everything's going to be done somewhere in a dark corner, and then some report will then at a later date be tabled, which nobody will really get to read. So there has been, I think, a concerted attack on the New South Wales ICAC, and there has been a shameful series of episodes which has led to that body being, I think, fundamentally weakened. And those things are very concerning for those of us who are very interested in the independence and strength and effectiveness of these kind of bodies.
Before I go back to Cameron with his ingenious algorithms, Alex, why is it that the federal blokes are, to some extent, even openly or covertly, pushing against an ICAC?
So you mean the federal politicians?
Yeah, the federal pollies.
Well, there is a select committee which is yet to report. It's going to report back next month. But it's quite an unusual situation where the very people whose conduct would be under scrutiny by an agency are the people who get to make up their mind about whether or not it exists and the type of powers that it has. And so I think there is a fairly high degree of self-interest in certainly the political class who do not want to have an ICAC which might make them accountable and scrutinise their conduct, and they certainly don't want it to be able to do that in the public glare and the media spotlight. So I think there is a fair amount of resistance, and there has been indeed for a number of years, to this sort of body being created.
Back to you, Cameron, and your book, Game of Mates. The central theme in it, I guess, is what you call grey corruption, which is not necessarily illegal with a capital ill, but certainly unethical with a capital un.
Yeah, that's right. And I think at the conference today about a federal ICAC, we sort of didn't get much of a chance to talk about that sort of corruption that goes on every day across councils, state governments and the federal governments in Australia, and is extremely costly. Because to combat that, we actually have to change the rules that an ICAC would have the power to investigate and check whether the politicians complied with. So if we don't have rules about cooling off periods when a politician becomes an in-house lobbyist for an industry body the following day, then they can continue to do that whether there's an ICAC or not, because they're not breaking any rules. It's not corruption. We have to remember that the rules we make get to define what corruption is or is not. So in New South Wales, property developer donations, that is corrupt. In Queensland, that's totally the normal way of doing business. So we need to make sure that if we have a federal ICAC body, that we have a system of rules that really make it difficult to act corruptly, and that body will be pursuing and making sure everyone complies with.
Cameron, amongst the federal politicians, who would be the strongest advocates for a federal ICAC?
From what we heard today, it sounds like the Greens and the Independents are the main advocates, and of course it suits them because they're the least powerful parties and they're the least likely to be investigated. and it suits them politically. And of course that's the only way we're going to get change, where there is that political pressure and where there's that opportunity and when those deals are being struck within the government.
Alex, we've been talking about the problems in New South Wales. I suddenly remember that bitter dispute last year about the benefits of public hearings and corruption investigations, with a former Supreme Court judge wanting them stopped to prevent, and I quote, the undeserved trashing of people's reputations. I found that a very odd argument.
Listen, there is an argument about what is in the public interest, and one of the papers that was given today spoke about a situation where a public hearing can be justified if it's in the circumstances where there is systematic corruption and there would be a crisis in public confidence. The point that I've made today was that we may already have reached the point where there is a crisis in public confidence. The Australian people, when they are polled, consistently report a staggeringly low level of confidence in our governments, institutions and the politicians within them. So really what needs to happen, in my view, is that the the principle that has to be elevated is that the people who exercise the right to vote in our representative democracy have got to be properly informed about these types of matters. They cannot be done somewhere away from the public view. They must be aired out where the people can see them, so that when they come to exercise the franchise as voters, they have a properly informed choice before them, knowing about these kinds of matters of corruption that might have taken place.
Cameron, would a federal ICAC be able to scrutinise the cliques that you talk about in Game of Mates?
I would hope that if we do get one up, that it would have the power to investigate more of this grey corruption and push back against this soft or implicit favouritism that we see going on. But it's actually a very, very difficult thing to do. I spent 5 years studying this during my PhD, and I spent a lot of money buying data on who owned land, who owned different companies, and mapping these relationship networks to find out who got favours. And it's a very difficult exercise, and it's very difficult to do it in a scientific way, in a controlled environment, because the unfortunate thing is once you start digging, you find everyone's connected. You need to be really cautious that you've got your counterfactual group to show that it's the connections that are leading to favours. So I'd hope there are some powers to deter that sort of thing, but it's this type of favouritism is really human nature. We like doing our mates favours. The problem is when we have the political power and opportunity, and giving our mates favours costs the rest of the country billions of dollars, then we need some system in place to control that natural human urge to bias your mates and ensure there's some kind of independence in those decisions.
I like the point you made earlier, Alex, that here are the people who are going to be judged, setting up the terms of reference for the system that will judge them. If that was applied to the criminal courts, it would be gobsmacking. But it will require a genius in legislative artistry.
We're very lucky, I think, here that we have got a long track record of anti-corruption commissions working pretty successfully in the main in the states. We can learn a lot of lessons from what has worked in the states, and frankly, what hasn't worked so well in the state. So the model which the federal parliament might be looking at bringing in can get a lot of good information from those sort of sources. There is a really big problem with the people who are going to be essentially debating that legislation being those who might be concerned about becoming customers of it. But it is to be hoped that we will not need to have a catastrophic scandal of the type that eventually brought about a clean out and a change in my home state of Queensland, that the federal parliamentarians can see their way to getting ahead of the curve and doing what are taking steps which might begin to rebuild public trust and confidence in the work that they do.
One of the issues here, Cameron, How do I sort of put that? Yeah, well, one of the subtle ways of trying to take the foot off the ICAC accelerator is to say it is redundant because of the Royal Commission approach. What's your answer to that? Royal Commissions do a damn good job.
Sorry, you're asking me, Philip?
I'm
not a legal expert, I'm an economist. My view is that the more oversight we can have, the better. The Royal Commissions obviously have the same problem that terms of reference are drafted by politicians, and it's not a case where they can independently initiate investigations into particular things. And I think that's the sort of powers we want an independent body like a federal ICAC to have, is that power to initiate investigations and respond to public complaints rather than just be a sort of creature of the political class and respond to the political whims or pressures.
Yeah, Alex is right, isn't he? The Royal Commissioners are often constrained, hobbled, blinkered by terms of reference.
Yep.
They certainly can be, and I think the Fitzgerald Inquiry stands out amongst Royal Commissions as being one where the sense of crisis in confidence was so great. And frankly, what Fitzgerald did to get the public in behind that particular commission was quite extraordinary. And I certainly, there is a problem with anti-corruption commissions. They themselves become bureaucratic creatures. They have an interest in their survival. It is difficult to guarantee their total independence from the government of the day, from some sort of legislative interference, as we've seen in New South Wales, and reduction in budget, which we've also seen with the New South Wales ICAC. So there is force in the argument that setting up royal commissions and dealing with these things piecemeal can be a useful tool. But in my view, your ICAC still retains the benefits of being a standing body which can play not only an investigative role, but can also prevent corruption and educate not only the public service and the politicians, but the Australian public about the real dangers of corruption and ways in which it can hopefully be prevented.
Alex, we watch with fascination and generally with approval when the phenomenon of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission started to roll around the planet. So let me ask you, are there ICACs, successful ICACs, internationally?
They are indeed. And in my research, I'm looking at examples which exist in Hong Kong and in Singapore. So the Hong Kong ICAC is a very successful model over a lengthy period of time. There are concerns about the position it now holds after the Chinese government has taken back over Hong Kong. The Singapore Corrupt Practices Investigation Bureau similarly has a very strong record, and it's to be noted that Singapore comes out ahead of Australia on the Transparency International Corruption Perceptions Index regularly. So at the moment, we are lagging behind that particular country.
I find that particularly interesting, Cameron, given that Singapore, one could see as a very mates society, and yet they've dealt with this with worthy objectivity. Gentlemen, I thank you. Alex McKean, barrister and lecturer in law at the University of the Sunshine Coast in Queensland, and also shedding light, Dr. Cameron Murray, an economist. Yes, he keeps stressing that, but he's a bit more than that. He's too clever to be simply an economist, from the University of Queensland, and he's the co-author of the new book called Game of Mates and The New Game that he was describing a little earlier.